Live from Los Angeles, it's the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights. We'll be swimming.
With tonight's guest, president and founder of Drug Free Solution, Jeannie O'Malley.
Look at the night sky.
And musical guests, Marina Manoukian and Goyane Simonian. I am Mark Lejeune, and now your host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Yes, indeed. This is going to be a big show. This is, we are talking today about some really, really difficult things. As a friend of mine put it, when he saw the lineup from our guest here to talk about heroin, meth, and opiate addiction, and our musical guests are going to bring us back temporarily to a time where there was rape, pillaging, and murder. This is a pretty big show. and the good news is that there's a lot of beauty in the show that you will hear on both fronts. As a matter of fact, the way Jeannie describes her work is actually very beautiful, and you'll see what I mean. And the way that these two musicians are going to guide us through musically is really beautiful and powerful. And it's interesting that I thought about this today. I used to say that if we had really good friends, then we wouldn't need psychologists. I've stopped saying that because not everybody has the kind of friends I have. And so I wish everybody could, but I get it. I have some really, really good friends. And because of them, I don't need a psychologist and they don't need a psychologist. And we don't need drugs and we don't need, because we have this community and this friendship and everything is discussed and everything is out in the open. And I didn't used to live like that. And as a matter of fact, on my way to here, I used to have so many secrets. And though I never lied, I avoided the truth. Or I don't know if I lied, but I definitely avoided the truth because I was so ashamed based on how I grew up on you can't do this, you're not supposed to do this, and blah, 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 blah. And so I thought I was this really, really bad person. And as I started to share my dark places, my how bad I was with really, really close friends and smart friends and friends that were connected. They weren't just fly-by-night friends. And I started to hear things like, really? You thought I wouldn't like you because of that? Or you even think that's bad? Or you don't realize that that's actually normal, or that's, you know, a lot of people do that or go through that, and I started to feel like, not at first kind of silly, but then relieved, and then like, wow, if everybody could have this experience. And so in my life coaching and with some of my friends, I've literally used the phrase, take me to your dark place. And sometimes they've taken me literally, and I've got to some really scary places with some really scary experiences, and I have to act like, oh yeah, this is all good, real good. And but when once we went through that process, even verbally in conversation and all that, really at the other end of it, there's kind of a laughter, a relief, like, yeah, we went there together, and I'm still me and you're still you and I still love you and you're alive still, and look at that. And so I kind of feel like there are no dark places. And with our guest today, you'll hear a little later that she's like been to hell and back, and she laughs at it, which is an amazing thing. And then she's like, bring it on. So you'll see why we love her when we come back right after this, and we're all going to learn something together from our guest, and then learn something from our musical guest as well when we come back right after this.
True performance takes more than just working out. Every day we demand more from our body. But what does your body demand? Hunger is not your body's call for empty calories. It's your body asking for nutrients it's lacking. It's time to reward your body with Boku Superfood, made from the world's finest organic ingredients, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and essential trace nutrients, all developed naturally and organically from nature's most nutrient-dense foods. Boku Superfood is quite possibly the best thing you can feed your body. So listen to your body. Reward it with pure, raw, beautiful food. Boku Superfood.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Marianne Williamson, Gary Anthony Williams, Sharon Stone, and Alex Gray on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. Or you can visit us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back, and I am Filippo, and by the way, Mark, I include you in that beautiful group of friends, and of course, Dorothy as well. That's, we've so been there for each other.
The group that has been to hell and back. Thank you.
I meant in the support group.
Both, actually, so I appreciate that.
We wouldn't be able to do this, actually.
Well, that's why we have the show. That's why we're here.
It's probably right. I mean, it is right, actually.
Well, and it was funny because you referenced that our guest is going to take us back to a time when certain things existed. And you know, unfortunately, as much as we try to see all the good that's going on, and there's so much of it, but there's a lot of that still happening in a lot of places. So this is relevant on so many levels and such an important discussion and paradigm shifting in many ways. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's get to it. Our guest is president and founder of Drug Free Solution. Get this. She pioneered an emotional wellness technology, which provides a breakthrough solution for heroin, meth, and opiate addiction, along with community healing, which is a big part for her. So look forward to finding out what that's about for her as well. Welcome to our show, Jeannie O'Malley.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. And we're laughing already, which is interesting.
I have to laugh. Right. What are we going to do if we don't laugh?
Right?
Yes.
So we'll get to how you were able to laugh about this, but let's start with what you're doing now and the dark places you go with people.
Well, you know, I'm very lucky because we have a process that people do at home that takes them out of that dark place. And so I can't say as a company we're oversaturated in people that are going through really rough times. Once they kind of merge with us and they start doing that process, they seem to evolve and to head in a different direction fairly quickly. And if they're on that process and they're participating on a daily level, they tend not to be in that dark place. And so I think that, but I do see people have to be taken out of there. You know, I think when we went to Santa Cruz in 2010, it was the first time I really thought I was standing at hell's door with the door open, and it was just like, come.
All of Santa Cruz or?
Not just Santa Cruz. Take that back.
As soon as you drove in. Take it back.
I didn't say Santa Cruz. No, it was just a group of people that were in a bad place because they had addiction issues. And, you know, we've had this emotional wellness process for 18 years and we've helped people with a lot of conditions. But when we kind of realized what was happening for people that were using it for addiction, it just became a mission of the company to really extend ourselves and educate communities and support people and help people desperately. People need help. And, you know, we're laughing and giggling. But when I leave here, it's a lot of sadness. And the saddest thing is the parents that have lost their kids. And it's so hard. You know, we have such a powerful solution. It just, we almost feel guilty for parents that have lost their kids, and just a tragedy.
Mm. Well, hopefully with the work that you're doing and what we're presenting here and people sharing this kind of thing, that there will be a lot less of that. And so I like the fact that you're talking about processes, because ironically, isn't the process of being in that hell, let's call it, since we used that earlier, isn't that a process too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all a process, you know. It just, you know, the thing is that it's hard because we're so caught up in psychology. We're so caught up in defining psychologically how things are working for us. And with that comes a lot of belief structure, biases and opinions. And so when you get into helping people and you're trying to get people to make those big transitions like coming out of addiction, you can't help them authentically when you're coming from those places. And so for us, we come more from a place of a brain state. So we understand that the brain is communicating. It communicates in a certain way and that takes us on our journey. And so from that sense, yeah, it's a process because we're in this like line of intention that we're operating in. And then you put yourself in another one, which is to get out of it. But the world's a confusing place when it comes to addiction because there's such a heavy conversation about being enslaved to it for the rest of your life. And people are really being incarcerated into it through their personal will and the lack of ability to get out of it.
When you were saying process, something was coming up for me, and I had never thought of it this way. And we've talked on the show a number of times about how, you know, beyond what's conventionally referred to as an addiction, everything is an addiction. You know, happiness and anger in different states, different, you know, foods. But is the addiction, do you look at the addiction as, I think we all refer to it as the fix, the high that they're going after. But isn't the addiction that whole wave? So the body
the
is also
is
expecting
the end result.
It's the whole process the is going through. That's what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The addiction is the is the pain, the accusation, the shame, the grief, the separation. Because addiction is a secondary issue. Like that's what we believe. Like I'm talking from what we believe is and what I believe as an inventor. Mm. That addiction is a secondary reaction. When we get into a situation like a heroin or opiate addiction, we're responding to a set of feeling structures within who we are. And addiction is an overexertion of those feeling structures. It's where we can't let go of them. But when you're on a path of destruction, you're sliding downhill. How do you put the brakes on? Like, is it addiction or are we caught up in a momentum that can't slow down and then we say, oh, that person's an addict? But if you know, if we look at heroin addiction, if we look at heroin addiction for us is defined as a set of feeling receptors that are saying I'm invisible. And so if you look at a heroin addict, by the end of their journey, they become invisible to the family, to the people they love, to their potential, to how their life has previously been, for the hopes and dreams they had for themselves. And the ultimate invisibility is to die. And so all of these conditions host these sentences. And so, yes, you're 100% right. When a person's an addict, they're chasing the end, which is where they're going to end up on their ass. That's what they're chasing.
Interesting.
So before the show, we were talking a little bit about this. And it doesn't have to be death. Right. I mean, it doesn't have to be for the rest of their lives, obviously, because this is the processes that you've built. And you talk about it like it's a science. It's a business. You're actually on the New York Stock Exchange, right?
Not the New York Stock Exchange, but we're a public company.
You're a public company. So there are people that want to see results. So you're having results. So the end solution can be what your life was intended to be.
Yes, for sure. You know, we kind of operate from the perspective that when you're born, you have this brain code. It's like a DNA, and it's how you're going to perceive your feeling structures in the first 7 years of your life. And that's why you can have two siblings that see everything completely differently, because their perception is geared toward resolving old patterns and old issues and old perceptions that they've had. And so we kind of work from that premise of locating those brain codes and changing them. And so when a person gets themselves in a situation, they're predestined to be in that situation because if they're over the age of 7, that's their archive. That's what they've created in the first 7 years of their life. And we all participate in those creations. You know, I have 3 children. I'm a single mom and I try really hard to incorporate my children into the potential of our work and what we do and how we help people. But they're still broken. They're still going to have those broken parts of their perception up until the age of 7 because they're reconciling their intention and what is for them. And so I think that's what we oversight when we're helping people and we want people to behave a certain way. We're not identifying that we need to observe more. You know, when you're in friendship with someone, you're observing that person. And then you get into a situation where, you know, you get into addiction, and it's a social disease right now. Like, this addiction epidemic we're in is based on social disease. It's not like in the 70s when someone died of a heroin overdose. Those numbers are pretty much the same. The seasoned heroin addict that was destined to be the heroin addict, they're pretty much, you know, only just a slight raise in numbers. This is an epidemic of social disease, like of lack of ability to embrace who we are and wanting to be invisible. And, you know, when a heroin addict, these kids are told to wait all the time. Wait, wait, wait. It's not time. It's not time. And people don't, we don't never want to hurt people within our environment unless we're an abusive person. But we're pretty guaranteed that in the first 7 years of a child's life, they're going to be denied in some way that's going to give them that breakage point.
Wow. When we come back, I do want to talk more about that, actually. I also want to talk about your processes. And eventually, I want to talk about how you came to be so smart on all of this. And I know that it's not a quick and easy story, but we'll get through it as best as okay. we can. But my first question when you come back is going to be, is saying, hi, I am so-and-so and I am a good thing? She answered it. Okay, we don't have to wait for the answer.
I'm all good with it.
Let me just put an end to that right there. All right, we'll be back with more Jeannie O'Malley when we come back right after this.
Listen to these words. He would not be beat by forces too fierce for man, woman, or beast. As the going got tougher, his courage increased. It's a little story with a big message, a message that speaks to children of all ages. It's about believing in yourself, overcoming obstacles, and never giving up. It's been called a masterpiece, one of the finest children's books ever written, and a true children's classic. Shadow Stevens has been called Dr. Seuss for the 21st century. His big little book, The Big Galoot, is a story about bullying. Bullying has become an American epidemic. And the Big Galoot talks about it in a way that will touch the heart of a child of four and a grandfather of 104. It's the story of a little boy with size 42 hands, the biggest hands anyone has ever seen. And the kids laugh at him. Then the laughter turns mean. They mock him and trip him and much worse. But throughout it all, Warren Galoot says, I'm a galoot, but I have good luck. You can't get me down. I never give up. A second grader named Chandler said, I thought it was the best funny book I have seen in my life. And we agree. Whoopi Goldberg said, this is a great story. Bravo, Shadow. The Big Galoot is available now as an ebook exclusively on Kindle Fire on Amazon for only $3.98. We strongly urge you to get it for your children, your children's children, or as a gift to yourself. Its message speaks to all of us. Have good luck and never give up. Go to Amazon.com and search for The Big Galoot by Shadow Stevens.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as The Green Children, Dan Millman, Hot Rod Fuller, and Mike Marino on our archive page at lifechangesnetwork.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back, and our guest is Jeannie O'Malley, and we've been having quite a great conversation on something that it can be really devastating for a lot of people. So we're hoping to turn that around, and I just wonder if that's one of the things we want to turn around is affirming something. I don't even need to say, if you heard what I asked before the break, Jeannie, could you speak on that?
Well, I think, you know, time for change, you know, like I think that, you know, our tagline of the Living Breath Project is changing the conversation on drugs. Because if you've got cancer and you want to fight the cancer, your friends and everyone in your life don't tell you to remind yourself you have cancer. Mm. You have to live as you're not going to die. Mm. And whenever we face a moment within our lives where we have to restructure our life, we have that smackdown, whether it's for a day, an afternoon, or a month, or a year, we have to smack down our own bullshit. We have to get out of our own way. And so if it has to be real for us, and we have to draw that energy to fight And when you reaffirm something that you're stuck behind something, you can't get out of it. Like, how do you set yourself free if you're going to be there forever? And I always liken it to what if I help a gentleman who's been in prison, say, and let's say he went there for 5 years. When he gets incarcerated, he knows he's out date, and he knows that if I start behaving, you know, if I really pull, he goes through a cycle. When he first goes into prison, he lets himself go into the motion of how he's going to survive. And then just before he comes out of prison, he gets himself ready to reintegrate as best as he's going to reintegrate. So when he goes into that situation, he has an out date on his heart. So he can say, I have this period of time to get my shit together. But if you say to a person, you're a threat to yourself, you're never going to be free, and you can't, you've got to stay there forever.
Yeah.
That's like incarcerating someone into their own skin. Like, how do you do that? Who has the power to say you will be anywhere forever? Like, nobody has that power. So I think the whole system is very good. You know what I mean? Like, I think the system of that organization is doing awesome things for people. But when it gets into a small-mindedness, you know, craziness where it's very restrictive and you can't communicate with other people. And I had a lady say to me the other day, it was very powerful for me. She said, I'm a very bad communicator. And I said, how come? And she said, well, I've been going to meetings every day for 14 years and I've sat in the same room at the same time of day to process myself, and I can't process out of that room. And I think that is that's something we need to be looking at, you know, is how do we expand and come together and help each other?
So how do we expand and come together? Because I know one of your big missions is to heal communities. So we're talking about communities that have been affected by heroin, meth, and opiates. And so let's start there.
Well, I think, you know, awareness is a major component, because what I noticed when I went to Santa Cruz in 2010, I went there with my children, and we were invited by an ex-pro surfer, Anthony Rufo, to help him with the methamphetamine addiction. And he came to my home in New York, and I worked with him for about 25 days. And then he said to me, can you come back to Santa Cruz and do a workshop? And I said to my kids, let's go for Christmas. It'll be fun. We can help these people. And so we set up a workshop. When we got out of that workshop, 27 people had come off of heroin with no physical detox in front of 80 people over a six-day period. And I got stuck there for 18 months, not because I helped people, because they were denied that they were well, whether it was their family, the community, people that had known them in the past.
And they're afraid too. So,
well, how do you be a not credible person looking for credibility? Like, who stands up for them? And I always laugh and say to my staff, this is awesome. We're attaching ourselves to people that have no credibility. But that's okay. Like, it's fine. I'll stand with them. But it's like the army that builds. It's this forgotten group of people that they don't have that integrity. And it just upsets me. Like, it's just as a woman, I'm a 45-year-old woman, and I just don't like injustice. And I think people need an opportunity to heal. And, you know, from our studies over the past 4 years with this addiction epidemic, 86% of the people we've helped started in their teens on a prescription. There seems to be a large amount of people between the age of 16 and 32 that were given a prescription between 2007 and 2012, and they somehow have become a street-using heroin addict.
Because of those drugs, you're saying?
Well, opiates are very expensive on the street, and so once a person gets cut off at the pharmacy from being able to take the prescription, they have to go to heroin because it's $20 a hit.
And they're addicted at that point.
Yeah, I mean, people destroy their lives. And when you meet this generation, they're a different generation. They don't want to talk it through. They don't want to figure it out. They want to get out. It's like they pulled into a parking garage and now they want to back out, but they're going to tear their tires open. Like, they don't want this to be the rest of their life. And I think as a society, people our age owe it to them to get them the hell out of there, because it's taking away their potential.
So how do you? Can you walk us through a part of this?
Well, if someone goes on our program, say for addiction, they receive it in the mail, or they receive it at an event, or they get it through a nonprofit that might be participating in our research initiative. So they're given their program. It can take them up to 9 months to do it. They do it for 3 to 5 times a day. The program incorporates 24 books, 1,072 questions, and 17 audio tracks. And those audio tracks act as a way to cleanse each of the 17 feeling receptors in the brain that have the inner dialogue of being a heroin addict. And so all their structure changes very quickly, and it's very supportive, and it doesn't depend on belief structure. The person doesn't have to say, oh, I believe I'm going to get well. And it bypasses the psychology of fixing the person, and it goes into just identifying, okay, when a person has heroin addiction, they have these 17 feeling receptors that have gone under 49%. Some of those feeling receptors are trust, kindness versus sarcasm, trust versus distrust. And so what we do is we raise those feeling receptors up over 50%. So when they're making choices, the choice is to preserve the presence of love or the presence of integrity or their transparency. And so we don't look at kind of going beyond, and we don't challenge people to figure it out. They just participate in a process.
And they don't have to believe in it.
No, because belief structure is psychological.
This is one of the things that I thought was fascinating. I couldn't wait to talk to you about this because I'm still not understanding. Because it's something that I've never heard it discussed like
this
before.
Well, the brain, right, is like from what I've witnessed, the brain believes that it's the I am factor, right? The brain doesn't see that it's a person. It's a thing. It's an organism. And the 10% we use is our earthly perception, and the 90% we don't use is our godly perception. I always say to people, people say, we need to use more of our brain, more of our brain. And I'm like, why? You're using the part you're meant to. The rest of it comes through wisdom. You need to connect past the doorway into the wisdom, and you'll have that extra part of the brain. And so, you know, and so belief structure is about saying, well, I'm 45 and my name's Jeannie, and I believe that, you know, my destiny is to be this person, and I believe that I'm this type of mother, and I believe in music and surfing, and I believe in all these things. And that, but they're baseline ideas of my personality, and my beliefs change all the time. And so when we work with someone, we go into the conversation of the brain, where the brain is having a conversation about itself.
Mm-hmm.
So a heroin
that inner
addict
voice
is saying,
kind of thing?
I am invisible. Mm-hmm. I am invisible. I am invisible. And as much as the person can't identify with that sentence structure, all their actions lead them to that. And so we go in and go into those feeling receptors. So when we help a person, let's say, that's been on heroin and maybe they're reporting to court, we do an assessment on that person, and every 21 days we can see their percentage increases of their ability and capacity to feel positive feeling. And so we're monitoring all the way along these percentage increases. And once you start increasing a person's percentage, you know, 2, 3%, 4%, you notice a distinct difference in the way they're communicating, the choices that they're making. You know, we're very much into observing the process. The process kind of came through observation.
You know, a new word just keeps echoing in my head while I'm listening to you talk and you know, thinking about how we look at people and personalities as incredible and life as incredible. And you were talking about that. I think it's such a penultimate point, this idea of lack of credibility, of you know, being now on the other side of that. And this word recredible is coming to me.
Yeah.
As 'cause that's what you're doing, is you're almost injecting hope. You're resetting, you know, the bar. It's a tipping point of getting them, you know, back into a zone of possibility internally.
And our community project was born through people's denial of wanting to get people well. And as much as that's an ugly thought, and many of us couldn't even comprehend that that would be a reality, it is very much a reality. The lack of potential of people reestablishing themselves is very driven through these archaic ideas, emotional ideas of keeping people at certain places so we can be at another place. Like, it really exists. And it's profound.
No, I understand. I've actually lost a few friends that experienced a lot of what you're describing in that too. It just got to the point where you don't exist to any of us, not to me, but, you know, to their families and their community. And on a lighter note, to Mark's point, I can hear the commercial. Have you lost your credibility? Well, we could recredit you.
Exactly.
We'll talk about that later. But all joking aside, I actually think, or I get this feeling, that what you're describing is not something that just people that are on meth or heroin or opiate. It's everybody.
Well, we help with 49 different conditions. So we help with depression.
Is one of them life?
Yeah, it's all life. And I always say to people, life still happens. You know, this is not a magic pill. This is just helps you reconcile. Like what I've identified with is the brain has this reconciliation process and we go through it every day. And it's when, let's say, we meet and then we have this epiphany about something and then we say, oh, wow, I was working on that for 3 months and then we had this communication and I had this realization about myself. That's called reconciliation. And so when a person does this process, they're making that happen. So when they're answering a question and doing the CD, that reconciliation process is happening however many times a day they're doing that process.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Fascinating. I'd like to know more. And I want to know when we come back how you came. I do know, actually, but I don't know how much you're going to share with us when we come back. I think it's important.
No, I'm going to share it.
Oh, okay. All right. How you came to be so smart on all of this. Our guest is Jeannie O'Malley, the president and founder of Drug Free Solution. And a little later, we're going to hear beautiful music by Marina Manoukian and Guyane Simoyan from Enlightenment Music Series. So all that when we come back right after this.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Mariel Hemingway, Shadow Stevens, Gary Zukav, and Kyle Cease on our website at lifechangesshow.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and at Facebook at The Life Changes Show. There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
We are back. I've said this before, but I can't think of a more life-changing conversation. And I guess if I'm not saying that, then we're not doing the right show. So here we are. You, our guest, Jeannie O'Malley, had some life changes leading to all of this intelligent conversation that we're having.
Yes,
where did you start?
I was born in Australia. I went through a lot of, like most people like myself, go through some kind of crazy start of life. My dad was a heroin addict and died when I was 7 and ran a drug house that I was sexually abused in for most of my childhood. And then through my teens, my stepfather was a cocaine addict and used to physically assault us. And so when I was 17, I kind of fled home in the middle of the night and then attempted suicide 7 times between the age of 17 and 24. And then when I was 26, I was diagnosed with cancer. And when I was diagnosed, I like was in this place like I have no capacity to feel love. Like the doctor could help me, but I already died and I kind of didn't want to be here. And so I went into this on this like little pilgrimage journey on my own in a forest in Australia for 4 days to kind of talk to the universe, which I'd never done in my life.
I think when you go
through, yeah, a walkabout. And I think when you go through intense abuse, you can shy away from talking to God. I think there's a part of you that you get to that level of realization where people say, you know, God is everything and God is all consciousness. And you got to reconcile that because it's like, okay, so God was that part of it. And so did God want it to happen? And so it can get kind of crazy trying to figure it all out. So I went into a rainforest. I was there 4 days. I cried a lot for those 4 days and I ended up staying 6 weeks. It was a huge life-changing experience just being there. At the end of the 6 weeks, I went through a process, a very spontaneous process. I heard a voice say to me, if I said to you feeling love was as simple as breathing, would you do it? And I took this strange three-part breath and I heard the word precious and I thought, wow, how would I hear that word? I had no feeling associated with being that sort of person. My critical faculty wouldn't have allowed me to hear that word, even if the person was in the room. And so then I heard another voice say to me, what a load of shit breathing. Get the hell out of here. You're dying. And I sprung up on my feet and told it to get lost and, you know, that it wasn't going to control me anymore. And so I had this kind of universal discussion and I went around three times doing it. And then I stayed there for 9 months and I documented 700 audio tracks, all of the questions that we use. And I left the rainforest 9 months later just kind of on this mission to prove it, that, you know, I wasn't going to go and say, hey, this had changed life. I just wanted to observe people doing it. And so I observed over 270,000 people over the past 17 years. And that's how we got our 49 protocols or programs for different emotional wellness conditions, because we kind of observe people and work backwards of what their experience was. But it's been a very, you know, community-based, person-to-person initiative. You know, it's not affected by medicine at any point yet because I'm still in the process of observation. And so, and then our breakthrough was in 2010 when we helped with addiction. And my children and I and a staff member went to the worst drug house in Santa Cruz and turned it into a wellness home and got a lot of people well through that home and have made lifelong friends through that home. But what was really shocking for me, about 9 months into it, I was walking out the front door and I heard an inner dialogue say to me, did you like what I did to Dad's house? And I thought, oh, see, there's a part of me that believes I just healed my dad's drug house. And so, you know, when we get into these process of a calling or what we think we're meant to do, it goes beyond our will of let's create this idea of, you know, it just goes on. It's just like crazy. But it's been fun and I'm all good with it now.
Oh, but it's
I went
been
through
fun.
10 years of therapy saying, why me?
I'm not sure everybody would agree with your definition
of fun. I'm not however. A doctor. Why do I have to get the information? You know, I cried and stuff.
Oh, the why me was not why did I go through all that hell? The why me was why am I the one to bring out this information? Yeah. Oh, you're funny.
Yeah. Well, because the world gets so offended. You know, if you don't have an education and you didn't do it their way, people just get downright, you know, offended. But now I'm fine with it. I'm 45 years old. I'm raising three kids. My daughter's a teenager. I'm like, whatever. I'm not going to apologize that we're helping people. I just do it.
You know, that's interesting. Yeah. Just today I was having that conversation with somebody where they said, you learn from these people that did something to me, but I don't look at it that way. And I said, yes, I learned a lot. I could have gotten cancer and learned it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, yeah, I learned it with these people in this process. And here I am. I think I would have rather that than the cancer or what you went through.
I mean,
no offense, but I mean,
like, truly, when I look back at everything now, it's when you're, I'm the sort of person, if I'm the one in trouble and I have to get myself out of it, that's not hard for me. What it tests my heart is when I witness people that are making changes in their life and trying to launch themselves forward, and they might not be as strong as I am to be able to say, well, whatever. And they depend upon people around them to embrace their potential. And, you know, I say to families every day, if that was my kid, I'm not going to lay down and accept anything other than what is going to be the ultimate best and the way for that child to rebuild their potential. And if they don't have parents, then they get a surrogate like you or I, or someone that can mentor them within the community. But, you know, that's where my heart hurts. When I never get afraid to go and help a heroin addict. I'm afraid of what the hell's going to come from helping them. You know, who's going to call me up and say, why the hell did you help that person? And so that's where it gets difficult, I think, when you see people that really depend upon the community and love and companionship and reinforcement from people they've chosen to be their mentors in their life, and they're cast out through some type of thing they got themselves caught up in. Well, and I always say to people, you know, if I can help heroin addicts, and I was sexually abused by heroin addicts when I was a kid, then we can all help heroin addicts because they're really not bad people. They're just like on a drug that's not cool.
Well, when you have an opportunity to hear the archived show of this conversation, you just answered one of the reasons why you.
Yes. Why me? That's it. Yeah. And I always say to people, the cool, you know, we help with all these other conditions. Heroin is just one of them. But I think it's so meaningful to me because my dad died on the way to rehab. And so I always think to myself, well, and I did an at-home program and he died in a hotel room. I always say to people, the building blocks of what we create without thinking about it is really amazing.
Well, the fact that you could say it like this and smile and laugh.
Well, I'm all about people's potential. My company is about creating a movement of people to become free, and I think we'll just stand there until the last man's through.
Well, one thing we haven't done, we've mentioned the company twice, that you're president and founder of Drug Free Solution. We haven't mentioned that drugfreesolution.com is the website of the company, and the website actually is more important than where you're actually housed, because it sounds like you're all over the place. You're everywhere. You're needed. So drugfreesolution.com is where people can go, and that's how they can what?
Drug Free Solutions website is about the emotional wellness process that we provide. Livingbreathproject.com is our movement website where people that are being affected by addiction can go and find a community mentor and get on a program and start working with somebody.
Fantastic.
Fantastic indeed.
Well, we'll just see. We need miracles.
So far, how many did you say? 270,000 or something?
Yes, we have helped a lot of people. It's really amazing. I look at my children, I see it within them. Like my daughter was with Anthony down at the beach because he came from Santa Cruz to hang with my kids while I'm working.
And the Anthony you mentioned earlier,
and all
right.
These people jump in and help me all the time.
Yeah.
You know, my kids are just like in awe of them.
Well, you know, and you just remind me that you just said something that's been a pet peeve of mine when people say if one child can be helped, if one person can be helped. No. If a million people can be helped,
yeah,
right. I mean,
people say to me one, and I'm like one.
One?
Are you tripping right now? Working for 40, 18
I was the
years.
One. I was
Are you
the
kidding
one.
Me? Like, bring me a million right now. Like, and that's how you got to do it.
You're just like, sitting too far for a high five. Bring me a million right now. Well, may they come.
Yes, may they come.
Because
the doors are open. We're bringing them in.
I get the feeling they will be helped.
Yes,
and
thank
the
you.
Community as well. Thank you so much. Much. This
Thank
is,
you. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
Super good. Thank you so much.
When we come back, interestingly enough, I asked the question yesterday, why me? When I was asked to be part of a remembrance concert by Marina Manoukian of Enlightenment Music Series. I literally started the program with myself as the program host saying, why me? So when we come back, we'll address that really quickly and the answer that I came up with. And then we'll have Marina Manoukian and Guyane Simonian take it from there with their beautiful music right after this.
The Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, lifechangesnetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@lifechangesnetwork.com.
We are back, and after that amazing conversation with our guest, Jeannie O'Malley, we have two other amazing musical guests today. And it's interesting how I mentioned the fact that I started this concert yesterday as the program host, and I said, why me? And what I came to is not only why not me, but it should be every one of us. Please welcome Marina Manoukian to tell us what that concert was about and why every one of us.
Thank you very much, Filippo. We're honored to be on your show again. And absolutely, we were honored yesterday to have your presence and participation in our program, in our concert, The Remembrance, which was a dedication to the 100th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide, which happened in 1915. And I have to say that your presentation touched the souls and hearts of those who were present, and we thank you so much for being part of that. And we very much enjoy performing for our audience and appreciate their great support. Yesterday's concert titled Remembrance was our special event to remember and honor each victim and survivor of the Armenian Genocide. And for centuries, Armenian people have stood strong and managed to preserve their identity through their culture and through preserving their culture. And it is important to honor each survivor for these acts of commemoration are crucial in preventing future acts of genocide and mass atrocities.
Yesterday, you played a lot of music by Armenian composers, beautiful music, actually, some of which has been used in some very big movies, in fact. So with artists like Komitas and Khachaturian and Bagdasarian, and there even was the daughter present of Mirzoyan?
Yes, absolutely. Edward Mirzoyan.
Yeah.
I find music finds its primary purpose as a spiritual expression of our affections, and we all likely heard the statement, music is the language of emotion. Music gives expression to our hearts, and when words are often not enough, and such is the music of Armenian people. The artistic expression of Armenian culture are the very heart of its identity, and whatever the media, their art and music tell the unique story of Armenian history and contemporary Armenian culture. As musicians of Armenian heritage, we find it is our job to keep this unique culture alive by introducing and reintroducing it to our society and to hopefully the entire world.
Well, thank you for being here on this special show and special, the 100th anniversary, and why you titled it Remembrance, right?
It's on April 24th. Hopefully the entire world will commemorate the 100th anniversary of the genocide.
And so today the two of you are going to be performing music of which Armenian composers?
We chose two selections from Edward Bagdasarian and a very well-known composer of world-renowned composer of Aram Khachaturian, who transformed and contributed to the rapid rise of the Armenian national music to the world, new professional level to world level, basically. And the two selections would be the Nocturne of Edward Bagdasarian, which is the embodiment of Armenian folk songs rich in colorful modes and lyrical melodies. And the second selection is from Khachaturian's famous ballet, Gayane Ballet. It's The Dance of Aishi. It's a story based on a young Armenian patriotic woman. It's a story of a romance and patriotism. Our audience probably have heard the famous saber dance, which comes from that ballet. Incidentally, the adagio from the ballet has also been used in Stanley Kubrick's film 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Right.
Here's another selection from that.
From that, but not just yet, right? Because we're going to be hearing
the Nocturne.
Something. Yes. Oh, the Nocturne. Okay. By Bogdasarian, by the way. Beautiful. Thank you, Marina. Thank you, Gayane. That was The Nocturne by Bogdasarian. And if you love this music and you are local, the Enlightenment Music Series puts on these events, headed by Marina Manoukian, puts on these events for free to share classical music with as many people that can enjoy it as possible, with several concerts throughout the year. So if you go to enlmusicseries.org, enlmusicseries.org for Enlightenment Music Series, you can find out when their next concert will be so that you could be there in person. And if you'd like to donate, of course, they are a nonprofit foundation, and that is how they are able to do this. And the musicians that they have are some of the top-notch musicians of the world, because most of them play for the movie industry and for the LA Opera and all that. And the symphony, they, of course, can pick from the brightest stars in music, and people from all over the world, musicians come to audition and be part of that. So the Enlightenment Music Series benefits and takes from this great pool of talent. So enlmusicseries.org. And actually, Marina, what about your CDs? Is that piece on a CD?
The next piece it is.
Oh, the next piece is. Okay, and how do people get your CDs?
They can order through Amazon.
Oh, they can.
They can through CD Baby, or they can contact us through our website, and we'll be happy to send
them. And the website is enlmusicseries.org?
Yes.
Oh, okay. And what would be the name on Amazon or CD Baby? That?
The CD which Dance of Aishi is recorded in, it's called The Inspiration.
The Inspiration. You know what we should do? If you'll give me a link, we'll get it on our website. So when people go to our website and listen to this show, they can click on and get a CD if they want it.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, look, I practiced these names so much yesterday that I wanted to make sure that I could use it again. Aram Khachaturian.
That's absolutely correct.
And the piece is
Dance of Aishi from Guyane Ballet.
Oh,
now it's my turn.
Perfect. Here's Marina Manoukian and Guyane Simonian.
Thank you.
Bravissimi. Grazie. Thank you so much. Actually, I wish I could have said that. How do you say that in Armenian?
Shnorhakalutsu.
Thank you, Varg. Bravo. Okay. What's that?
Thank you.
Oh, how do you say it? Wow. I'm glad I didn't have to learn that for yesterday. But maybe for next time.
Absolutely. There's always going to be next time.
I hope so. It was a lot of fun and very, very, very special. Thank you both. Thank you, Marina Manukian, and thank you, Guyane Simonian, and to our guest, Jeannie O'Malley, for this very special show. Of course, thank you to all of you who are listening that keep your attention and who on these subject matters as we have our life-changing moments together. I am Filippo Voltaggio reminding you, as your life changes, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.